stay home and chill, keeping you company during the coronavirus.
Hello, this is Stephen Leng and I host Access All Areas on Fubar Radio every Thursday from 6 to 7pm. I hope you're all staying home and maybe taking advantage of Pornhub's offer. They've got all their premium content for free right now. Go and enjoy yourself. You are listening to Stay Home and Chill on Fubar Radio, keeping you company throughout the coronavirus.
Ian Boldsworth on Fubar Radio.
Drunk Girls?
Yeah, LCD sound system.
Are they famous? Are they well known ones?
Very intense.
I've heard of them, and I don't know nothing beyond 1973.
Am I allowed to introduce you first?
Sorry, mate. Bit professional, isn't he?
Joining us now, it's Ian Lee, anyway. Hello, yeah. Ian.
You can bump me if you want.
Can what you?
You can bump me if you want.
I don't want to.
No.
How long we got? It might be a good story, though. I reckon could if be. I bumped you...
Get in the mail online.
Immediately, sure, yeah.
Tragic comic bumped from failing online radio
can
station. That's what they're
about. Can you imagine that?
Everything is negative, so it'd be tragic comic, failing online, everything they like.
Oh, I think we should do that then. I think for the last 10 minutes we should just like, maybe not 10, maybe 5 minutes.
Yeah.
We'll just have a row.
Yeah,
that
you
we,
kind
we,
of flagged it up
take,
a bit now.
No, but you take it out. So all you do, you take it out and whack it on Twitter.
They're
not going to double check it.
Get like a little 2 minute, it'll become a meme.
They could go in on you, Ian. Ian Boldsworth is like former comedian.
Ian Boldsworth,
really be savage about you too.
I just wish the press
would leave me alone. They're making my life into a soap opera with my marriage and drugs. And I've had some really bad 6 months. There was a well and an owl and I called a listener a C word and...
Did you actually do that?
Well, I did, but it didn't go out on air. They said it went out on air.
Right.
We've got a 7 second delay at talk radio.
Yeah, yeah.
So what? This guy was being a C word. He was fat shaming me.
Oh.
So I just went, do you know what? You're a C word. But then I dumped it. So only he heard it and the people watching on YouTube, because we stream the show live.
That's right.
They heard it. It didn't go out on air. I'm not stupid.
Okay.
I'm not stupid.
You're a bit stupid.
I'm quite
sometimes.
Stupid, actually.
I mean, you say you're not stupid, but I've spent like...
I spell my name properly.
I've spent literally hours watching you calling up late night.
Right. Well, then who's the stupid one? If you're watching phoning up quiz shows going, is it Ghostbusters 2?
Constantly.
Yeah.
So, but I
that was fun.
Because I know you a little bit. I don't think... We've met once before.
I know we've spoken on the phone.
We met once before. It was 1998 or 99.
Great year.
At the Canal Cafe, it was. And you were working with Mackenzie.
Oh, yeah.
Channel X, who did Big Night Out and all that
sort
of thing, they did these nights where they put a few people on the same night. And on Monday night at the Canal Cafe, and I was in Big and Daft at the time with Rob Rouse and John Williams.
Oh,
and we did.
Yes!
You were on first, then there was a break, and then we did Big and Daft second.
Big and Daft,
yes,
I remember
so
that.
So that's when I met, very briefly, in Cross.
I may have been a twat to you then.
No, you weren't.
Okay, well, I apologise for not being a twat. I should have been. That was out of character for me at the
time. I know that.
Because I was a massive twat. That I used to phone up these late night quiz shows.
Mm-hmm. I remember, because when you used to do that, when I used to work with you at
LBC,
and you used to come in and play like Ghostbusters 2,
and I would, and I did it because I just split up with a girl I'd been living with for about 8 years, and so I was a bit lonely, and I thought, and I'd stopped drinking and taking drugs. I was like, oh, what am I going to do? I'm going to phone up these quiz shows. And so I'd phone up and they'd go, right, things you'd find in a handbag. And I'd go, is it Ghostbusters 2? And some of them would get really pissed off and have a go at me, and some of them would get the joke. And then I stopped doing it because I got a phone bill of 750 quid.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is an expensive gag.
Can you put a price on that?
750 quid.
Yeah, but genuinely, though, I don't know. That could be the sort of thing that just stays around forever now.
Yeah. Oh, they're funny, but I wish I had that 750 quid now.
Yeah, I really do,
instead of the distant memory of me winding up, you know, some poorly paid presenters at 2 o'clock in the morning on Quiz TV.
I think if you spend an evening listening to them again, sure, you might be angry with yourself. Sure, sure, you might now recognise symptoms within that. But also, I think you might have a sense of pride.
Do you know what?
As it gets to them.
Actually, I can't remember the thinking behind it. I'd read a book about Frank Zappa, and Frank Zappa died quite poor.
Yeah.
Because every time he made money on something, he put it into the next thing.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, he did like these gigs with the Royal Philharmonic. The South Bank Centre, but he lost money on it, but he just really, really wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of been my philosophy for the last 10, 15 years is is it funny? Is it worth doing? All right, we'll just throw some money at it and make it happen. And if we can recoup some of that, that would be awesome.
I would maintain that is an excellent philosophy, I think. But I also think it depends what sort of life you want to lead, like yourself. So Sidey died penniless, essentially, Chris Seavey, you know. But when you look at his oeuvre of work and the things that he did and the things he created and, you know, all of that, and you sort of go, it's kind of good that Chris was skint.
Yeah. And the first time I worked with him, I worked with him loads of times, was when I was at LBC doing the Drive Time show. Imagine me doing Drive Time.
Remember when you got moved to Drive Time from the weekend show, right?
Which is, you're listening to the Ian Boldsworth show. This has been happening all the time.
Yeah, well, I was saying to Ian Boldsworth,
they know each other in real life and they've just been chatting.
You're actually the reason why I went to LBC. And I never told you this because I used to listen to your show on the weekend.
You ended up working with Anna Rayburn. I'm so sorry.
Well, I actually said to Ian earlier, we're not going to mention her name.
Coxmudger.
I've still got that clip.
I've got that clip as well. Yeah. But
don't worry, I don't know what they're about either.
Anyway,
it's a clip that was played out. There was a show where she did, what was your favourite word? Somebody slipped through the word cocksmudger. It's when you tip the end of your penis against, sailors used to tip their penis against the end of the Bible when they were angry about something. And that is cocksmudger. And I think you've been you, I've been had, and that's radio.
Yeah,
it's how it goes. Okay. It's a great clip. Clive Bull, another presenter there, text me once on the weekend because you'd put out on Twitter, can Anna Rayburn's Natalie send me the clip? And I went, don't call me that. Clive text me. And then that's when I emailed it over to use in one of your shows.
I did
right?
it in the show, it's a great clip.
Yeah.
Cocksmudger.
Lovely.
The Anna Rayburn story.
And that went out at kind of 2:30 on a weekday. So can you imagine? Okay. Obviously, didn't go down so well. Because when you were saying earlier, Ian Lee, about not calling somebody the C word, Ian Boldsworth, to a lovely boy, Connor Wallace, on the show, you have literally just turned around and called him. Connor, you're being a...
To a boy?
Today, did I?
No, not today. Do you remember a few shows ago?
How
kept
old was
calling
he?
It. Right. I mean, he's 19 or 20, 19 so he's fine.
Still.
Here's the thing.
Go on.
I rarely use that word. I very rarely use that word. Mm. I will use that word if I'm angry.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't sworn on that show at all. And I did do it, and I drew it out. And I went, to be honest with you, Connor, I think you have been today a little cunt. And it was very precise.
Wow.
But he laughed. I've noticed the worse you are to people, the more you say that, the more they're, they really like it when you...
Yeah.
Fuck your fans.
Fuck
your fans. I don't like the sound of these people. They sound like scumbags.
Well, we have some crossover,
Ian Lee goes on a radio rampage again, slacking off.
I fucking missed that goal then.
Yeah. I got it. Yeah. Straight away. I was
up for it there, man, and you dropped the ball there. I love your fans, actually. They're great guys. I've not seen you for, I guess, at least 10 years.
Yeah.
Maybe 11 years. 10, 11 years. And it's
how weird that
nothing has changed.
I know, right? That's nice, though.
Zebra pens were saying things
at the same time. No one is hitting on me. Stop it.
I ain't got no wedding ring no more.
No, exactly. I've had fucking... In today alone,
who?
I've had Johnny Vegas, Bob Saget and Ian Lee
First of all
crack onto you.
A little bit of a flush there on the neck. She's getting embarrassed. Let's move away from this.
No, it's fine. I'd say Bob Saget definitely was not. Because he mentioned it, and he said it about his fiancée.
So by saying that, you're going, Vegas definitely was.
Vegas wasn't either, but we're just going to have a nice day out of Thorpe Park. I don't understand the problem here. With you, by the way.
I'm not going.
You are coming.
Going
do you want to come
own.
To Thorpe Park with me and Johnny Vegas?
It sounds a bit shit.
Johnny's not invited, Ian.
Oh, sorry, yeah, you're not invited. Yeah.
She's invited me to Thorpe Park. That's not bad.
Well,
right,
that's
come.
Good.
Come to Thorpe Park.
To Thorpe Park. Come on, guys, please. We're better than this.
From here, we definitely are better than this.
Michael Payne and Marcel Somerville on FUBAR Radio.
We've just been talking about Love Island.
Well, of course, because we have an insider. Well, not an insider. We have a former.
We've got a veteran.
I have so much knowledge. I was the first boy in and, last boy out of the villa. You know what I'm saying? That's a record.
We were just talking about Sharif's exit. And theories abound as to why he was booted out of the villa.
There's 3 rumours that are circulating upon the social media.
In at number 3 this week, top 3 reasons why Sharif got kicked out of the villa. Number 3, he had a fight with Anton.
I don't think that's a fact. I don't think that's right.
Okay, so you don't think number 3 is the one. So theory number 2, and I'm just trying to break it down.
I hear that.
So theory number 2 is that Sharif had a mobile phone in the villa
and was on Instagram Live.
Hey, listen.
Dude, how funny that is.
You know, that is mad, because if it was on Instagram Live, 100%, there were people would have been going mad.
The producer would have been commenting and going, Sharif, we can see you, bruv.
But to kind of debunk that one, do you know how hard it is to get a phone into that villa?
So that's a very good point.
Basically, you're at home, you pack your suitcase, someone comes to your house, your chaperone comes to your house, goes through your whole suitcase.
Wow.
And then you go. I think that one's out the window. Yeah. Number one.
Mm-hmm. Number one. I don't even know if I can repeat this on air. So the number one rumour about the reason Sharif was booted out of the Love Island villa was because he was masturbating in the jacuzzi.
You know what? Like, I'm thinking maybe the jacuzzi was on, like the bubbles were flowing, like
the top Google search for Sharif is apology, by the way.
Yeah,
got it.
Got
it here.
Obviously, like the bubbles are flowing, like he's not had any sexual contact for like a good few weeks now.
Yeah.
Like he's in there by himself.
Uh-huh.
Like he's there maybe seen Anna from across the garden.
Mm-hmm.
Marcel, they get us on the screen.
The bubbles are floating.
Sharif is
he paid the full penalty of love.
Right? No, I do hope we do. I hope we find out. In the meantime, we've got a fucking legend in the studio with us right now.
She's wearing leopard print.
Damn it.
Can't go wrong with a leopard print.
And she sang one of the biggest dance tunes, like literally ever in history.
Wow. It's a fact.
Point blank, period. Americans say, with the T on the end.
Underlined.
Period.
Fact.
Undeniable fact.
You can see we're excited. That you're
I am flying, literally.
We're basically going to spend half an hour doing this intro.
I love it.
And then by the time we actually introduce you, it'll be the end of the show. No, it is Rosala.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Great to be here.
Wonderful to have you. It's great to
Thank
have you.
You.
I never thought I would be meeting you.
Wow.
All those years ago when, like, my sister and I, we used to, like, everybody's free, like, that was an anthem for everybody.
Thank you so much.
Everybody. And like I said, I just never ever thought that I would be talking
in the flesh.
In the flesh, you know, to the woman who sang that song.
Oh my God. When I get, you know, told that, I have a lot of people later on in my life saying, I never thought I'd speak to you. And it's true. This is amazing.
Hmm.
It totally throws me. I feel...
That's crazy.
Honestly, it totally throws me. I think, what?
Do you remember that session?
I do. I got to the studio with two guys called Tim and Nigel, who were known as the Band of Gypsies.
Right.
They loved my voice. They had songs for my voice at the time. And they said, what do you want? I said, look, I want to do uplifting, hardcore dance tracks that, you know, I don't even want to sit down when my songs come on.
Nice.
You know, and I want them to lift their hands up in the air and go, this is really positive.
Yeah.
And Nigel's like, look, I got this chorus, just going to the studio and sing it. And I started singing Everybody's Free to Feel Good and just making up, you know, you make up things. And it's like, that's the melody. Let's use that melody. And I just sung it over and over again. And we got the chorus. It's like, right, we got the chorus. Let me write the verses. Now, what do you want? I'm like, I told you, uplifting.
More positivity.
More positivity.
Pile it on.
Brothers and sisters, together we'll make it through.
Mm-hmm.
That says it all.
Did you envisage that it would be this big?
At the time, no. Because, you know, when you're in the studio and I'm recording tracks, I just think majority of the tracks I record, I think they're good. But when it's out there in the open world, it's beyond your control.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you just hope for the best. And at the time, Born to Love You was released and it became a sort of a club, sort of underground hit.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't do anything. It didn't cross over commercially. Then we released Faith in the Power of Love. Mm-hmm. That kind of went top 75. So we're not going anywhere, but I'm going, oh, in the
top
75.
We're onto something.
In the top 100, positive. So that's good.
Keep pushing positivity.
Yeah, keep pushing
pile on the positivity.
There you go, there you go. So then they released Are You Ready to Fly? And then that just went top 20.
Yeah.
And then they release Everybody's Free and...
Whoo, the rest
is history. The rest is history.
Incredible. Were you a big clubber before, you know, penning these big dance hits?
Well, yes and no, not really. I mean, I used to be a DJ, if that says anything.
Yeah,
you know,
no, it says a lot.
I used to spin records in a nightclub in Zimbabwe, where I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And used to play in bands and go around different venues, you know, doing other people's songs.
Yeah.
And obviously I always knew I wanted to be a singer and make this my lifetime career.
Yeah.
That was my ambition.
Oh, has your kind of positive attitude always been this infectious as well? Did you ever have like naysayers and people who
absolutely
would talk shit and say you weren't
with
them?
Oh God, you always get them in life. You know, you always get miserable people who want to bring you down. And you know, you just got to tell yourself, just keep putting one foot in front of the other.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember in Zimbabwe, I told some friends, I want to be an international artist. And I was 21, 22 at the time. And one of them says, listen, You passed it. You're old. It's not going to happen.
How old was you?
I was 21. Yeah, I was 20, 21. And it's over. You know, 23, go and get your walking stick. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And I think, wow, and one of them told me there was this little small village in Zimbabwe. And they're like, listen, you know, you're that age now, just get married, have kids, and forget about it.
Damn.
You know, so I had that.
Yeah.
I had that. And funnily enough, it just lit that fire inside me.
I was going to say, yeah. Was there an element of defiance in your music?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, I know there's obviously a lot of celebration and there's lots of positivity.
Absolutely.
But is there an element of like...
Yeah, if you're going to tell me you can't do that, I'm going to show you.
Yeah.
Michael, yeah. I'm going to show you. I'm going to do it.
Everyone's
I'm
going
to try
free.
My best. Because everybody's free to feel good.
Apart from the jacuzzi in Love Island.
It's true. You better, be feeling good in that jacuzzi. Sharif, you better not be in that jacuzzi, bro.
Well, I mean, you're free to feel good for now, but we're going to have to talk about that later. And now you're free to go.
Harriet Rose on FUBAR Radio.
Earlier today, I went to chat to Mr. Zac Efron alongside Alexandra Daddario. So we chatted about Baywatch, the brand new film, which I went to see last night and I laughed out loud very raucously, which I don't really do very often. And a lot of people in the audience were kind of irritated by me. I absolutely loved the film.
Thank you.
I nearly weed myself laughing about five times. But also, it's a big bit of escapism for me because in Britain, our beaches aren't so nice. They're just covered in like dead seagulls and bits of chips. And
I've been to a beautiful beach.
Have you? Are you sure?
Yes. Don't remember where it was, but I remember it was near a hotel I was staying at out in the country, and it was so, it was all rocks and very lovely.
That's what I mean, though.
Very grey and beautiful.
But you enjoyed it. Zac, have you been to a British beach?
I'm sure I have, but...
Honestly, don't bother. I wouldn't...
Don't bother?
No.
I want to see everywhere and go everywhere, and I don't think there is such thing as a... an ugly beach.
As long as you don't mind seagulls that might attack you.
I don't know.
There is such thing as an ugly beach.
Really?
Yeah, somewhere.
I mean, if you compare them to other people, but if it's the beach, it's the beach.
It's the beach,
yeah.
So there's a lot of what we Brits call snogging in the movie. Specifically you, Zac. And Dwayne Johnson said you had very soft lips. Alexandra, would you agree with that? Is it true?
Yes. From what I can remember, I think they're very soft.
What's your secret? Because I really need to sort my lips out.
It's just natural.
It's just in the genes.
It's just genetics.
I don't know. I think, what the heck? I can't answer that. Sorry. Chapstick?
Chapstick's very important, though. Okay, I'm going to take that home. Chapstick.
Yes.
In the series of Baywatch, there was some pretty epic cameos. And I was wondering if you guys could guess. I've done some fake ones in here.
Right.
I want you to guess if they're real or fake. Okay. Up first, we've got Mila Kunis, who played a blind girl named Bonnie who gets lost and saved and then has a boogie board ride.
I feel like she's too young. She would have had to have been like seven or...
She plays a young girl?
She can't tell us. I'm going to say she's yes.
Correct.
Yeah, I'm going to say she was like very young.
She was literally seven.
Oh.
Yeah.
God, I got
good
that.
Good one.
And you did, young girl was in, you did say young girl.
Ah.
So. Shaggy, you know Shaggy, right? Shaggy.
Yes. Yeah.
Singing in the summertime on the beach.
No, it's too long ago. I'm going to say no.
He was.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I thought it was.
And last one, NSYNC singing Bye 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 with Mitch doing a dance routine on the beachside.
That's wrong. That was my...
That was my big old fake one.
Yes.
That was my big old fake one.
That was the 2000s.
Yeah.
90s, 2000s.
You got it. You're obviously an NSYNC fan, right?
Yes.
You guys...
Who isn't?
Everyone has to be an NSYNC fan. Alexandra, you've been getting some jip from your mum, right?
Yes.
For your tweets and stuff. How did she react when she first saw the movie? Did she send you, like, a long email of things that she...
No, she came to the New York premiere and she actually loved it. And she said, you know, I thought it was a lot of fun and really funny and... She was just very proud. And I think that that's very cool because my mother sees me in movies a lot where I die or I'm at threat. Like, I have an earthquake and I'm stuck in a thing or I have a Texas Chainsaw Massacre attacking me. So I think she was very happy to see a film where I didn't almost die and where she could just laugh and have fun and not have to leave theater because she was worried about seeing her daughter in a precarious situation.
A little bit of light relief.
Like, feel like a proud mom. I'm proud.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love your mum. That's so sweet.
And Zach, your grandparents went to see it, right? Did they enjoy it?
They did, and they loved it.
Before we go, I've actually found out your guys' wrestler names, because I know, obviously, Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, is in the movie. Would you like to know your wrestling
names?
Yes,
please.
Okay, so mine is Super Pancake, because I'm very carby.
That's a great name.
Zach, yours is Xavier Sweetcakes.
Sick.
Yeah.
Cool.
Am I right? And Alexandra, yours is Cowgirl Medusa.
Cool.
So I love Medusa. Take of that what
I
you
love
will.
That.
Wow, dude.
I'm going to leave that there.
Better than my porn
that's
name.
That's going to be a rap name.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, guys.
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
Joined in the studio by Andy Kindler, stand-up comedian Andy Kindler.
There seems to be a thing in comedy now where people talk about, it's like a good thing, they go, oh, I really like that, it's so relatable. And you go, but why? And that idea now that comedy has to, you have to relate to the comedian. We're actually, surely it's much better to hear someone talking about something and go, I don't know this guy, I don't know who this person is. And they're more interesting if you go, oh, they're from a completely different country or background or something. That's more interesting than seeing someone saying to me, oh, yeah, so today I just did what you did. I just go, like, I don't want to know what you did. Well, that's what I did.
Yeah, the whole likability thing is ridiculous, because sometimes you know, like think, you know, like the original Office. Remember when everyone liked Ricky Gervais back then? I had another guy I had a feud with. Also a guy who's six people on you online. Ricky Gervais. His fanatic fans will come after you.
Oh, yes.
But, you know, like, when he was on The Office, I loved to hate him on that. I mean, he was unbelievable. Yeah. And so no one would reject that show going, oh, he's not likable.
Yes,
because
that's
the point of his character.
No, sure.
But he has to be likable as a hateable guy.
I think it's sort of bordering on psychotic to try and present yourself as the nicest person on... I have a theory, but I'm probably not going to go into it now. People that have to present themselves as being likable on stage is kind of... It's just like, you've got to be funny. As a comedian, you've got to be funny. I mean, I go out of my way to present myself as unattractive and mean and thick. All of the bad qualities that are in my head, I sort of like express myself like that. You know, I go out of my way to do all that. What are you laughing? What are you laughing at? I mean, it's really hard to present myself as unattractive. Is this what you fucking... Fuck all of you.
Well, you change your face or something to get into that uglier...
No, but I do sweat a lot, which not everyone finds unattractive.
But you're talking about crowd-pleasing. I can't stand crowd-pleasing.
I think it's kind of like... I'm not interested in making friends, really, was my approach when I started out. I think it's weird when people come on and it's kind of like their main goal is to leave... having made 100 friends that they're going to ignore in the street later anyway.
I went to see my my therapist, and he was saying, keep it light, but he was saying, so what you want to do with comedy is you're trying to make the crowd like you. And you go, you're trying to make everyone laugh, aren't you? And I said, no, I'm trying to make 4 people at the back laugh. That's what I'm trying to, I don't really care about. I want those people to like me. These guys are almost like, they're just in the way. They're just in front of them. I'm really trying to make about 3 people in the room laugh.
Right. I got into, not trouble, but I got kind of controversial just by making fun of comics. Like that line I had last night was made Jim Belushi a big star?
Sure. That's a great line. We were talking just before you came in about the list of comedians that you basically tear apart.
Yeah, like I said, Jimmy Fallon ride, you have to be this easily entertained to ride. But it's like, there was a lot of comics, because I give a speech in Montreal every year, the state of the industry. Mm-hmm. But a lot of comics got very mad at me, because I almost like, you can't talk about other comics. In fact, all of Louis's friends got mad at me when I went after him before all the stuff happened.
Sure, yeah.
You know, so I always felt like, but I wasn't in therapy then. Now I'm in therapy. Now I realize that part of me does want to be liked by everybody, and it's impossible.
Maybe it is a defeatist attitude, isn't it? I want everyone to love me, but I don't want to have to go to them. I want them to come to me.
I know that I over-exaggerate how poorly I'm doing on nights. You know, like, I go, and it's like, if someone doesn't
also,
die from laughing, I'm like, what's the problem here?
Absolutely. Well, you're deconstructing comedy, aren't you? And you're on stage. And so I used to do a thing where I still... probably would if I was gigging at the time, but I'd go on and say, do you like jokes? Do you like jokes? Do you like jokes? And then I'd say, you're in luck, mate. I'd say, you're in luck, mate. I got 6 of the cunts. Let's do this, right? And then I'd do 6 jokes. And then at the end, people would say, you did quite well with only 6 jokes. And you go, I've done an hour. And I do 6 jokes at the beginning. And someone goes, you've done quite well with only 6 jokes. And you go, it's all jokes.
Yeah.
The whole thing is jokes. Just because I said it was 6 jokes, you're meant to work out that.
Well, there seems to be a thing where like it'll be like an MC that will come out, and at the end someone will always say, oh well, you actually should try doing the comedies, well, you're actually quite funny, you should be one of the acts. You maybe you should do. You could do it. You could do it as well.
I know. Well, I used to get the worst ones. I used to get like a. Well, I laughed. I thought you were funny. Yeah. Was that part of your act when you were getting upset at everybody? It was like that kind of thing. Like,
yeah. I'm quite aggressive, and everyone expects me to come up to. I was in the Soho Theatre. Just done a gig at Christmas, and my mum had come to see me, and I'm standing in the. So I'm getting my mum a drink, and someone just comes up to me and goes, "Why you cunts?" And I'm just like, "It's my fucking mum. It's my mum. I'm not on stage. It's just my mum. You know what I mean? It's an act. You know? It's just it's crazy." But yeah.
Access all areas on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, everyone. Good evening and welcome to Access All Areas with me, Stephen Leng. And for one show only, the very gorgeous Elma. Hello.
Hello.
Love Island's Elma. Is that a weird, like, name to have now? You're
it
officially...
Is. It is. It's so strange. Like, even people approach me, they're like, Elma, and I'm like, oh, hi. And then I'm like, oh,
you
yeah.
Think they think
yeah,
they know
them. Me.
Okay, well, we have a show to get on with. So you are going to be sitting in Lizzie Cundy's seat today, co-presenting with me. And we also have Crystal Rasmussen.
Hi, you're, so nice to be here.
You're Crystal, but not looking like Crystal.
I don't know. It depends what you can let your imagination do. I think I look like Crystal right now.
Well, I mean, of course you do.
Do you want me to explain how I look?
No, that wasn't what I was going to say. Do you want to?
I've got gorgeous red curly hair, perfectly contoured cheeks, and incredibly high heels and an ingrown toenail. That's Crystal.
Delicious. How are you?
I'm good. I'm super well. I'm, you know, just getting ready for my Edinburgh show.
Yeah.
And you know, coming off the back of a book tour. Edinburgh for me is just sort of, you know, a different space. But still, I'm getting ready for that, and I'm really excited.
So have you done Edinburgh before?
I've done Edinburgh before with the drag band I was in, Denim, who've been on this show before, on Callum McSwiggan's show.
Oh, yeah.
That's how you say it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, but yeah, I've done it twice before, and I loved it. But this is the first time going solo.
Okay.
You know, back when I did Pornography, I was in a group then as well. And then when I went solo, it was scary. But after a while... You know, you really get into it. And so I'm looking forward to having an hour on stage to myself just to talk about the most important thing in the world, which is, you know, me.
Nice to yourself.
Yeah, of course.
I really like how you really got Elma's attention there when you said you did.
I know, yeah.
Yes, no, what?
I wish I was that interesting. My God, no, I've lived a very sheltered life.
How did you first start doing drag, other than the way that I did, which was wearing my grandma's heels when we'd stay over for the night?
Well, that's literally how I started, yeah. Too. Sort of like building a character in my bedroom. With like duvet covers and pillows, and be like, oh my God, I look so rich. And like, I grew up, you know, with not much money. And so back then, all I wanted to do was like be this glamorous woman, you know, and now I am. No, I'm kidding. But, you know, so I started that way. And then I guess eventually I was invited onto stage because I met some drag queens and they were like, do you do drag? And then I did it and I loved it. And then now it's sort of like, my full-time fucking job, which is...
Who would have ever imagined?
Well, probably me, I guess. Like, no, I'm kidding. But yeah, I mean, seriously, though, I was talking about this weirdly today because I was actually on a podcast. Don't know if you've heard of them.
No.
No, never. But I was on a podcast and we were talking about this. And it's so weird because back then when I created Crystal, she was all about the fantasies that I could like never be. So she was like beautiful and rich and thin and American, as you can tell, because my real voice is actually Lancastrian. But she could do anything that I wasn't basically allowed to there. Uh-huh. So she was super sex positive and whatever. And obviously as my life, when I'm not in drag, has got closer to that. Obviously I'm not an international American woman, but I'm nearly there. And so, you know, it's weird. Like, I don't really know where she stops and I begin in the best way. Whereas mm-hmm. back then she was totally separate to me. Mm-hmm. Something I'd do behind a closed door. And now she's like, you know, we are within each other all the time.
Oh, that sounds a bit sexual.
Well, it is. Oh, it's a very sexual experience being me.
Every
being
day.
Both of us. Exactly. Have you ever done drag?
No.
No. You're so intriguing. I could literally, I think I could sit and listen to you all day long.
Oh my God, I could sit here and listen to you too.
Oh, stop it.
You should do drag. Oh my God.
I've seen a couple of female drag queens, but actually none in this country. I've seen them in America and in Australia, but never here.
There's quite a few here.
Really?
Or I think a few of them are non-binary, but, mm-hmm. you know, assigned female at birth, but I think there's a lot of amazing, really out in the bars and often in like gallery spaces, there's like these incredible drag performers who are completely redressing what we think of as drag.
Yeah,
not
yeah,
as this
yeah.
like sort of quite old school, like acidic drag thing, which I love as well. It's important to honor your heritage, of course. you know, those like northern queens from where I came from who are like, you fucking get out of my bar. It's like, I love it. It's really important. But, you know, RuPaul's Drag Race, which, you know, I'm a fan of, it really only says that like men can be drag queens, and that's not true. You know, I don't want to delete RuPaul's incredible legacy. Like, you're right. The reason I'm probably in full-time work is because of RuPaul in some sort of like liquefied way or whatever. But at the same time, I think you can have idols and still call them out. I think that's what having an idol's about, right? You've got to be able to critique your idol, or else you're just like, I don't know, delusional. Although people can't critique me because I've never actually done anything wrong. And I am the idol of many people, so...
Yeah, what do you think about the fact, like, with Love Island, mm-hmm. There was one bisexual couple a couple of years ago, Sophie Graydon, if I remember rightly. But there's never been any of that kind of wider sexuality stuff. What do you think? It kind of doesn't lend itself to it in a way.
Yeah, I mean, I did hear rumours for this year. I thought there was going to be. But, yeah, it just hasn't really been brought to anyone's attention.
How would you do it? The thing, isn't it? It's like a bit like if you're trying to pair people up. How do you... You just have end up having so many people, I think, is the point, isn't it?
Like, I mean, they asked me to be on the island this year.
They did?
But I've actually dated all the boys on there already, so it was too weird because they'd have all chosen me. So
all the girls would have hated you.
Well, and I've dated all them too, so... You know, it's not the first time we've met, but I think it's a...
Joey Page on FUBAR Radio.
I'm very excited to... Welcome, Highly Suspect, into the studio.
What's up?
It's really good to be here.
It's really good to have you here. You're basically musical geniuses and royalty, and it's really exciting to have you in the studio. You're successful, guys! What about that?
I feel so much better about myself all of a sudden.
Yeah, I don't feel it's hungover anymore.
Like, this is great. Why are you hungover?
I'm not, I'm just kidding.
Oh, no, you can be.
No, I am.
Yeah, so what happened last night? How dare you come in here hungover? It's just Tuesday night, or Wednesday, or what day is it? Where were you last night?
Hawley Arms, probably.
Yeah. I don't remember. Okay, good.
That seems to be a fun spot.
So, where are you staying while you're here? Are you staying up in Camden, or have you been moving around? How long have you been here for?
We've been here for a couple of days,
right?
We got here yesterday. Flew in from
been here about Detroit. 36 hours, yeah. I think.
And for Matt, it's really going slowly.
That's actually close to a couple of days, so...
Yeah, it's not... Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
right. Jet lag on you too hard.
It's probably quite a boring question for you guys, but do you have ways of dealing with... Like changing time zones all the time, like it must be.
Yeah, I can tell you all about what I did.
Oh yeah, go on.
I got off the jet at like 6:30 this morning, and then I just kind of struggled all day, feeling horrible, wanting to die. You know what I mean? Just didn't want to do anything. But I stayed awake until like 7, and then I just slept for like 14 hours.
Because they say that you're supposed to have whatever your first couple of meals, whatever the time is in the new place, you should have, like. The meal that you would have at home or something to get your... So if it was like dinner time at home, you should have breakfast at dinner time and all that kind of thing.
I just consider myself in the time zone that I'm flying to as soon as I get on the plane.
Yeah, right.
And then I take sleep drugs and I just pass out.
Yeah, we've done it so many times where like every time it's shocking to us. We're like, oh, fuck, I'm so tired.
Yeah,
why don't we just go to sleep?
Tired as normal.
Is it a thing that for you guys, as soon as it comes to showtime, it just like kicks in?
Yeah, we have what we like to call pre-show poops. It's when you get really juiced up and then all of a sudden you have to poop right before the show.
It's the Meyer Brothers for you.
is that on your rider? We must have four cubicles available.
We have
pre-show
four toilets backstage.
Yeah, I mean, just I guess like. TMI, but I mean, getting excited for the show definitely gets you pumped up. I mean, like you hear the crowd screaming outside; they're all amped. They want to see you, and then that gets you all pumped up, and you know, shit happens.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah, everything's pretty slow mo till the show starts.
Yeah.
Can I ask you about the fact that you've been nominated for 3 Grammys? First of all, that's incredible, and congratulations. But also, like, is that something that you ever thought would happen? And conversely, is it something that you're like, that's great, but we wish we'd have fucking won one?
Yeah. We didn't expect to win at all. didn't expect to get.
One of them you lost out to David Bowie. He's like my.
That was a win.
Idol,
so. Yeah, that was a win exactly. for us.
You won that one.
It was a win that we lost. Yeah,
I was gonna say.
Imagine if we won against David Bowie, like his last chance to get a Grammy.
This
would have been
this really awkward for me because I'd have been like those bastards.
Yeah. No, we didn't want to win that one. I would have been okay winning the first one.
That would have been ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because we were. When we found out about it, our phones started going off at like 7 a.m. and there was about six or seven of us packed into one hotel room. We had to park the van around back and then sneak people in because we were over capacity in the rooms. We were sleeping, like people were like sleeping on the bathroom floor.
Right.
We were, you know, and then, hey, you're nominated for two Grammys. I couldn't even eat yesterday because I didn't have any money and now I have Grammy nominations.
So, yeah, is it really out of kilter like that? Like, since then, have things changed for you, obviously?
Drastically.
Yeah, okay. So tell us a little bit about that journey from basically not being able to eat to doing all right.
I just kept working.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't overnight by any means.
Nothing is.
But it seems like it is, though. Like, a lot of times, you know, I didn't know about Dua Lipa until she blew up. So to me, it seemed like she had overnight success, but, you know, she had multiple albums before that.
Yeah. Right.
And that's kind of the same thing it was for us.
So tell us a bit about the sort of beginnings. Like, how did you guys all meet? Were you friends before the band? Who knew who? That kind of thing.
Rich and I go way back to the womb. We're womb mates. Well,
Yeah.
You guys are choking each other.
Rich, when we were born, Rich almost killed me. And if we didn't have the technology that we had 30 some odd years ago.
Do you hold that against him?
All the time.
All the time, yeah.
And then Matt, he moved from Florida to Massachusetts, and we were still playing some cover gigs, and he came out. And
he was in a band that used to play the same venues that we were playing.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
On the Cape.
Yeah. He worked for their brother doing landscaping.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we became good friends.
And then Matt quit his band and came out and drum teched for a couple of years and earned his stripes, and then was totally terrible at drum teching. He hated it so much. I used to throw drumsticks at him. but now he's a brilliant writer and he fits right in.
I'm very pleased that he's found his calling.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say that.
You just helped him out a lot.
He's just so good.
He gives me really nice compliments, just snags him back. Fuck you, man.
I can see why you're drinking. See why you're drinking heavily.
Yes.
You've been bullied. I really need to find you someone to talk to.
Dan Clark on FUBAR Radio.
My very special guest today, Mr. Stephen Merchant. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Dan.
How you doing?
I'm all right.
Good.
My question is, how are you?
Is that the one question you have for this?
That's
whole...
it.
Yeah. I'm okay, yeah. We're here in Los Angeles. You had your own show on HBO a couple of years ago. Did you have a team of people?
Small team, yeah.
A small team.
Small team in the sense that it was five or six people as opposed to 12 or whatever you might find on a big network show. Great working with a team like that.
Yeah.
Really exciting, and you just feel like you're in a room with very smart people and you throw up an idea and it kind of, you know, pinballs around the room and develops, and or like a snowball, a lot of ball metaphors here, like it snowballs, you know, and it kind of builds, and that I really found exciting.
Was it weird at first, though, having written either solely or with Ricky before,
right,
to suddenly like sort of throw an idea that like it's your show and someone might go, I'm not sure about that, Steve, what about this? And
or but you know what it's like as a writer, I think that's the process. There's no ego for me when I'm writing, like it doesn't, I don't feel defensive about ideas or kind of embarrassed if someone doesn't like it, or it's not a question of sort of pulling rank, you know, so that's exciting to me, the kind of the dialectic, if you will, of the writing room, you know, all these different views kind of clashing together. I think what is important is that you remain very sort of firm in what the tone of the show is going to be. Because otherwise it can start to get disparate, like all these different ideas, and it's quite easy to spend hours just discussing things and never nailing anything down.
So your job is to be more like making sure the vision is coming.
I'm very much the Donald Trump of the equation, I've had some success. I'm calling the shots. I'm shooting from the hip.
You have a no Mexican policy on your staff.
I have a no Mexican policy
on your writing.
I've built a large wall. Everything is tremendous.
Yeah.
It's going to be a tremendous show. We're full of tremendous talent.
You're going to make HBO great again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I'm the sort of ringleader, but, you know, I'm surrounded, I'm sure as Trump is, by the best brains in the business.
I love that this interview is now going to be a comparison between Trump's career and yours.
Sure, yeah.
You need to get yourself a really tall building in New York.
Michael Payne and Marcel Somerville.
on FUBAR Radio.
Our third and final guest, who is a legend in himself. He goes by the name George the Poet, man.
Yes, yes.
It's been a long time coming, man. You know how long I've wanted you to pass through this show? It's mad.
Yeah, man. Everything in its time.
But you've been busy, boy.
Yeah.
You've been genuinely doing mad things.
Yeah, it's been a colourful journey still.
Yeah, because when I first met you, we worked together on an EP called Lucky Strike. Mm-hmm. I remember that. Steel Bangles produced the whole thing. You came through, and I remember you laced the whole... It was all prologues for the songs that I was doing, and you laced the whole thing in one day, one sort of session.
Oh, yeah.
And then I just thought, this guy is just insanely talented, you know what I mean? Huh? And then after that, you've collaborated with, like, Wretch 32, Krypton Conan...
True.
Chasing Status, obviously.
That one's up.
And we actually had Rosala in, and she really did give that song her stamp of approval. You know?
Blessings.
So it feels good. Yeah, it must feel good, right? I said, then anyway, like I said, you know, in your spoken word career, you've done some brilliant things. But now you're an award-winning podcast host. You've
multi-award-winning.
Award-winning doesn't even do it justice. I'm going to read them out. This is the closest I'm ever going to get to presenting This Is Your Life. You know what I mean? I am Michael Aspel right now. Not Michael Payne. Michael Bumbleclark Aspel. So you won Gold, the Audio Boom Podcast of the Year. Best Arts and Culture, Best Fiction, Best New Podcast, Smartest Podcast, and then Silver, Acast Moment of the Year, and Silver for Best Current Affairs.
And that was at the same award ceremony for the British Podcast Awards, at the same one.
I think that deserves a fucking round of applause in itself.
Thank you very much.
Did you have these as goals when you first started the podcast?
No, I didn't know that there were podcast awards.
Mm.
Podcasting obviously has exploded pretty much exponentially.
Yeah.
In recent times, but I was just doing what I thought was exciting, what felt like a bit of a risk. Like, how is this? How are people really gonna take to this? Because this is hella unfiltered.
Mm.
But I guess that's the reward on the opposite side of that mountain.
Yeah. So you won an award for Acast Moment of the Year. Can you tell us what moment that was, or are they talking about the podcast like generally as a moment?
Nah, I think in our application we submitted a part of the podcast that's from an episode about Grenfell Tower.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's not really about the tower, but it's about the life of someone, fictional character.
Right.
But in the lead up to the tragedy. And that took me, it took me about 2 weeks to write.
Mm.
It's a piece of drama, but I didn't say a word about Grenfell for a year.
Mm.
So I guess it took me a year to write, because I see Grenfell from my window, innit? So I was just shell-shocked.
Yeah, of course.
For time. And then I went on a trip to Canada. My mind was opened. I saw some amazing things. Shouts out to C2 Montreal. But just before I took off, like, everything just clicked. I was like, I got to make that story. And I quickly voice note. I sent Benbrick, the producer. I sent him an 8-minute voice note. Got on a plane. And then within weeks, that thing was done. So that's the one that...
they picked as the specific moment that they awarded you for.
Yeah.
Is that your highlight? Is that a personal highlight? What's your favourite moment from the... it's like a 9-part series, isn't it?
Yeah.
What's your favourite moment?
What's your favourite song? Do you have a favourite song of yours?
At the moment, I'd have to say, I don't know. I think it's easier for me right now to pinpoint my favourite film, but my favourite song, because I don't think I can.
No, my guy, see, I was all saying of yours.
Yeah, of your song.
Oh, of mine.
Your own track. Yeah.
All right, okay, cool. Favourite song right now, it's called Cut From A Different Cloth, and I'm listening to it a lot, and you'll probably do this a lot, and you'll probably do this a lot, Marcel. Even you, Natalie, with your
secret
rap career that no one's meant to know about.
I do listen to my own tracks quite a lot, I do.
Right, so you listen to something that you're just about to release. I don't know if, like I said, I don't know if you guys...
Yeah, just to get a vibe, just to make sure it's
still
a vibe.
Just make sure it still slaps, you know what I mean? So right now, that is the track that I haven't got bored of yet, so I know it's a vibe.
Wouldn't that make sense for it to be, if you are releasing new music, to be the song that you love the most of your own? If you're going to release it, wouldn't that make sense for that to be the track that you love the most,
right?
Because you're about to put it out.
Exactly.
There, right?
That's how you should be
feeling. Yeah.
Exactly.
So I've got a theory. I might as well throw this out early.
Please.
I feel like there's a formula for everything. Couple months ago, I caught up my little brother. He just needed a bit of space to do revision. I said, "Yeah, use my yard." And I came back, and he was revising for his A levels maths. Yeah, and he's talking to me about this subject. I was like, "If you can break this down to me, a complete layperson in this field, then your revision's going well."
Yeah.
And he basically explained that what he was revising, differentiation, is the study of how, of just change, representing change graphically, how something changes in relation to something else.
Okay.
And the way he broke down the formulas, I was like, I thought, yo, there's formulas in life. So ever since then, I just see formulas for certain things. Mm. And I think what you lot just touched on is one of those kind of formulas. If you know that as an artist, you're going to be putting out work that is most exciting to you at that given moment, and you know that you're going to change as a person, then we can actually calculate the formula of what your output's going to be. We know that it's going to take your present moment, your vibes, whatever music you're listening to, whatever book you might be reading, add all of that up, and it's going to output exactly your projection of yourself in all of that.
Yeah,
that's
true.
A formula.
Yeah.
You get me?
That's a good fucking point.
Yeah.
That is a really good point.
I
never
looked
at it like that.
I don't know why I need to break that down to you lot.
No, I'm glad you did, actually, because I think I've thought about that kind of concept before, but I've never been able to kind of put it into those words, you know,
as
concisely as that.
It's inherent in existence. It's truth. You get me? Like, you might catch on to it in bits. Like, that's a clue about how the universe works. But remember, it actually works, regardless of whether or not you understand it.
This is true. Irrespective of us, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you are absolutely right.
Ian Boldsworth on Free Bar Radio.
Story. What a perfect run-in that was to speak with Rob Schneider on the telephone.
Yeah, hi.
Hello,
how are
sir.
You?
I'm all right, man. How are you?
I'm good. I couldn't help but notice you're swearing a little bit, so I guess that's okay on here.
Yeah, go for it. What ones do you want to do? What swears would you like to do?
No. I'm not for just egregious vulgarity.
No.
So I'm not averse to it.
I agree. Say you were doing an interview on a radio station that didn't permit swearing. So in the UK, you'd be regulated by Ofcom, which is a regulatory body that would fine you for swearing. But this station isn't Ofcom regulated, so we don't fall under the remit of Ofcom.
Okay.
So if you were doing an interview with a station that was Ofcom regulated and you came off that interview and were like, do you know what, I wish I could have just called them whatever, what's the most likely thing you would have wanted to call me?
I don't even really know you that yet, Ian. I figure
I can give you some words. Rob, I can help you with some words to call Ian.
Right.
First time I ever heard the C word, by the way, spoken out loud. I mean, I knew that it existed, but literally my whole childhood, up till I was 13, it had never been uttered by any adult or any child in the playground. And then when I was 13, my first trip to London, England, I got on a bus, and like within 45 seconds of being in the country, I had heard the word about 90 times.
Yeah.
It's over the most minor thing, though. Somebody on a double-decker bus had taken somebody else's seat. The next thing you know, I said, you fucking cunt. You bloody cunt. You know, you are, you fucking cunt.
Yeah.
It's like, I was so aghast.
But to me,
it was such an unnecessary.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
Egregious use of the most vulgar word in the English language that I had never heard, and all of a sudden I was about to hear it 80 times between one bus stop. I just thought, my God, what kind of country is this?
I put it to you, Rob, though, that you still use that, like you drew on that from your past as a sort of a titillating way for you to be allowed to do it on the radio just now.
I mean, I didn't think about that.
When you were telling that story, you couldn't wait to get to the bit where you were giddy.
Ian, it's not fair that you know my mind and how, you know, comedians work.
Yeah.
You're obviously a comedian yourself.
Yeah, you were proper. I
can
hear
don't
it.
Don't show. Listen, you're the Oz. Don't pull back the veil. Let your audience enjoy themselves.
All right. Well, all I'll say to you then from behind the comedy curtain is you were so excited it slightly threw your timing off on the run up because you were trying to get to it quicker.
Yeah. So it's a pain in the ass talking to comedians because they know the wheels when they're working.
Do you know what's worse about me?
What's that?
I'm an ex-comedian. So so I've stopped doing it. So now I've got literally fucking nothing to lose. I no longer need to play by the rules on any level. I don't need to, because I'm not like looking for careerist opportunities. I'm not like going, oh, well, if I say this, then I'm out of that club. It's like, fuck it, I'm happily out of every club. So I'm the most.
Well, here's the thing.
The most dangerous
you're recovering.
Yeah,
you're recovering.
Yeah.
You're never really an ex.
That's true. That's true. You retain the comedic sensibilities. So do you know what? And please don't take this as. Rather, you can take it how you want to take
it. Here it comes.
No, take it.
When there's never anything good with that preface.
No, take it however you
want
to take
it. You never get like,
it.
Don't take this the wrong way, but I'm a huge fan.
Yeah.
Never comes there.
Yeah, but you're
never like, hey, don't take this the wrong way, but I think you're a pile of shit. Never anything good. Don't take this the wrong way, but I think you have an incredible mind. It's never like, don't take this the wrong way, but oh my God, your wife's gorgeous.
Right.
But
okay.
There's never anything like
that. Well, all right. Well,
what do you got?
All I was going to say was, I didn't know you did stand up.
Oh.
That was all. I actually wasn't aware of it.
Okay, I was expecting some vulgarity.
Exactly. Oh, and you're a cunt. No, No, I didn't. I actually didn't know you did stand-up. I genuinely didn't.
Well, I was avoiding it for a long time because you have to really, Ian, how hard it is.
Yeah.
You have to do it all the time. You can't just get up there and fake it. I mean, Jerry Seinfeld says, hey, I don't care how famous you are. The audience gives you 1 minute, maybe two.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you have to be funny.
Yeah.
You can't fake it.
I spoke to, do you know Harry Hill? Is he UK? Harry Hill, not Howie Hill.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Harry
yeah.
Hill and Al Murray as well, who are huge comics in the UK. And whenever I've spoke to either of them, that's not a name drop, but whenever I spoke to either of those two, they work together as well, you know, a fair bit over the years. And they both maintain you've got 5 minutes grace with fame. So if you're famous and you're
yeah,
well-known,
I mean, I think that's being generous. If you're an American guy going over there, I think you get 2.5 because
okay.
after a while, the audience, like my daughter, who's a pop star, she was playing in like Shrewsbury, like some music festival. And I went through Shrewsbury when I was a young man, and it was like a 98% unemployment back then in like the early 80s. And it was just not a happy place to be, you know. And I just remember, as any place would be with that high unemployment. And I just remember my daughter called me with tears in her eyes. She says, I was between songs. My daughter's Elle King.
Okay.
She says, I was between songs and I was tuning my guitar, and some guy in the front yelled out, get on with it! I think you guys, it's your language, we're bastardizing it, so you can do what you want with it.
Do you know what, man? You're hitting on another reason that I packed in stand-up, is that I couldn't be arsed with that level of rudeness anymore. Like, I really couldn't.
Well, you know, I mean, American jazz, which was an American invention of taking traditional kind of music and just be more, not necessarily a, but just kind of going off theme and enjoying that being more off than on in an improvisational form. It's the same thing with stand-up comedy,
yeah,
which is, again, started out as an American art form, which we're really kind of, I guess you can go back to Mark Twain or whatever. It is something that you have to deal with. And, like, what you don't want to do is it's not like a yelling match. You know, and some people who come to your show or think, well, I'll just yell one in there too. But it's like,
yeah.
You know, George Carlin. I used to go see George, you know, the great comedian, the American comedian,
yeah,
George
yeah.
Carlin. He'd be backstage, and he'd have these rows and rows and rows of these 3x5 cards. And he says, hey, now I'm not just performing jokes. I'm performing a written word. I've written this out. It's a performance. And so sometimes people can throw that performance off by jumping in. I mean, comedy's a very, as you know, it's a fragile thing. It's like cutting a diamond.
Yeah.
Somebody yells out at the wrong place, or if your timing is off, or if you flip a little word here or there, then it just doesn't work. It's like Mark Twain, the great American writer, who's really probably should be credited as the first stand-up comedian. He used to travel around the world, take notes. And before people could travel around the world, like in the early 20th century, he would come around, perform at like union halls, when there was union halls, and charge like $1, and then he would just regale people with these stories.
Yeah.
But he said, explaining a joke is like dissecting a frog. All the parts are still there, but it just doesn't jump.
Yeah, yeah, nice. That's perfect. Yeah, absolutely true.
Harriet Rose on FUBAR Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, FUBAR Radio, I'm joined by Albert Hammond Jr. in the studio right now. Albert, how's it going?
It's great. We're in a studio. It's warm. It's pretty good.
Well, outside it's not so warm. You've joined us in blizzard temperatures in the UK. Sorry
yes.
about that.
No, it's okay. It's all coming from this Russian air.
Oh, do you know things about
Siberian air? I mean, I don't know things. I just it happened. TV happened to be on. I know things.
You know stuff.
I know stuff about
you
weather.
You know one whole more thing than me because I didn't know that. So.
Well, just the TV was on and they were like, oh, the Atlantic swells are being stuck up. Not stuck up, like
stuck up
very
something.
Snobby. I'm not going down to London. No, and then the air was coming across, which means like Germany, France, where I'm going next, is even colder.
Have you ever thought about a career in meteorology? Because your voice is incredible for reading the weather. Just then, I was completely enthralled by it.
That's so funny. I'm glad. No, but I feel like that's definitely a job that you could do when you're older. I would love to do that.
Yeah, just like next career
path. I'd love to just sit there and talk about things.
Is there any sort of rituals that you do before gigs that get you G'd up and ready, so even if you are tired, that you can bring your A game?
Oh, no matter what, you can be as tired as you want, you'll always get up before you have to go.
Yeah, but like, is that, do you like practice yoga or do some like eat some hummus? I've heard lots of different pre-game rituals.
Eating is terrible. I like to play on an empty stomach. You got to be hungry almost to play. Well, if you're full, it's just
lethargic.
Burping and just like, oh, you know, I don't want to play. You got to be light on your toes. Yoga is fun. I don't do it before a show, but you know, I haven't, maybe if I was, when I start playing arenas, I will gladly do yoga before show. I always wanted to come out. My goal is to be playing big enough venues, huge venues, so I can bring a treadmill and I can get sweaty before I go on stage, so I can walk out sweating, because I like Mike Tyson used to walk out before a fight sweating. And I thought that was so cool. Everyone would just come out and look like they were, like, not ready. He would just come out like, I just beat up two people and now I'm going to kick your ass.
So you want it to look like you've already done three gigs.
And no, you're... I'm just like, oh, man, this guy is ready to go. You know?
He's going to sing his ass off.
I like that. I enjoy exhausting myself for singing for, you know, it's the entertainment that I like to do is always enjoyable. It's never a bad tired. It's always like a very fulfilling tired.
That's the best way to be, though, having a fulfilling tiredness.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I'm very lucky, even in its intensity like this week. I'm still very lucky.
Is there anything that you feel like the UK brings to when you perform live that is different to other countries? Is there anything you sort of look forward to when you come down here?
To be completely honest, every place, every time you go, can change. And people always say like, oh, that one. And the certain ones are notorious because maybe they have a better batting average, but... We just played Brixton, opening for friends, and I felt like it was my show the way the crowd was cheering. It was amazing, and people were always like, oh, you go to London, it's like, you know, it's dead. It was anything but dead. It felt deafening. I think that's part of the fun, is the unknown. Also, your role in having to bring it to them or take it out of them if they're not willing to give it up. You know, that's part of the, where's this show going to take me? Where am I going to have to push? Where am I going to break? And then realize I have to keep going. That's always interesting to me.
Must be an exciting feeling every time.
That's why your nerves never go away, because they change into something where maybe when you first start out, you're like worried about crazy things that wouldn't happen. And now your worry isn't so much a worry, but how quickly I can adapt to the situation. And that just keeps you on your toes.
Access all areas on FUBAR Radio.
Ricky Garnaccio.
Oh, you're listening.
Hello, Ricky.
What's going on, Ricky?
Hey, baby girl.
Hey, baby. Have I said your surname correct? I've tried.
Garnaccio.
Okay.
I do this every time.
I'll just call you Ricky.
Every year.
I know, I'm sorry. Because obviously we loved you on Geordie Shore. You were there from 2012, 2013. Do you miss not doing it?
Nope.
That was quick.
It was good, but... I mean, we all went back to the big birthday battle a few years back. I mean, I came back from Australia for it, and it was just, when you've got that many people in the show, we're trying to film, there's 16 of us, and wow, it wasn't the same as when I first went in that series two,
right.
And we're just all just going, now we're just going crazy and stuff, but I don't know, man, it was good. Obviously, it's given us the platform to do everything that I'm doing now and stuff, but yeah, I mean, those days are going out every single night.
There's a long time ago now.
Drinking twice a day, man. Having two hangovers a day. Yeah.
Come on, I'll do that as well. My PAs. Can't talk too much about it.
You boys and your PAs.
Hey, I'm 32 now, Jack.
All right, okay then. There we go.
He's calming down. But I have to say, Ricky, I loved you when you did Celebrity Big Brother. I mean, that must have been one hell of an experience for you.
I'm sounding a bit negative towards every TV show, isn't it?
But you're glad it's over.
It was boring.
Really?
I was 27 when I went in there, and obviously when you go in there, you think, oh, you're going to be partying, you're going to be drinking, or doing whatever, really. But you've got three rooms to go between, and then they weren't giving us, I think because Charlotte did the series before me, I think they cut back with Ofcom with giving them drink. So when I went in, we were getting nothing between 14 of us. So I was like, you put a 27-year-old party boy in a house with no tools.
Yeah.
I'm bored. give me something to do.
You were getting restless.
Yeah.
So what's going on? Because listen, on the 1st of May, it's my birthday was on the 2nd of May. Thanks for the present, Ricky. But on the 1st of May, you wrote a little tweet saying, when's Single Appreciation Day? So what's going on? Are you single? What's going on with the love life?
Yeah, of course I'm single. I mean, I'm going back to Australia at the end of this year. I'm obviously looking for property over there. I'm buying. I'm moving over there for good. Can I take this weather anymore? So yeah, I've been single for 3 years. But I mean, Jack has said, okay, this. When you travel around doing PAs and you travel in different countries and stuff like that, it's hard to settle down with a bird, especially being the public eye.
Yeah, you can't.
It's just hard to find someone you're generally right. I'm picky, Liz. Yeah. I'm really, really picky.
It's good to be picky. But I mean, do you find that you want to have, if you did have a girlfriend, it would be someone famous, or would you rather not have that again? Because you've got so much attention with all the press and stuff. Or is it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously that relationship. I mean, it's still obviously. on going with people talking about it and people wanting interviews on it and still all that and all that bollocks kind of thing. But I mean, it's just part and parcel of being the public eye. Everyone wants to know what you're doing, who you're with, and how you're doing this. Everything's magnified. Obviously, when it comes to a public relationship with someone else in the public eye, it's kind of like, if it does go west, then, I mean, your side wants to be said, and then their side wants to be said. And that's the only issue with it.
Right. So it's kind of like, obviously.
Yeah, but then you've got obviously people that aren't the public eye, and I mean, everyone wants to be famous these days.
Now, what do you think? I've heard Adam Collard might be going into the Geordie Shore house. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, I saw something yesterday. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, with Geordie Shore now, I mean, the whole cast really sort of changed, Liz. I mean, I'm just giving my honest opinion as well. I mean, it's not really Geordie Shore anymore when they go out and get tans and when they go to the gym. And it was kind of, it was based on Jersey Shore. And that's how we got our TV show off the back of them. But, I mean, the whole kind of...
It's changed, hasn't
thing,
it?
The thing with it now, it's kind of like the prefer in-house relationships. You don't see the lads going out anymore and really pulling birds and stuff. It's not really...
It's staged.
I don't look at it as Geordie Shore, really. I mean, it's what I was saying. If you get all the... I mean, with Jersey Shore, they've just filmed another series of all them back together. I mean, you've got Paulie D, who's 38. You've got the situation, who's now in prison, but he's 40.
Oh, bless you. I'll take him a paper.
Stay home and chill, keeping you company during the coronavirus.